Welcome to Kimapa. Jared and Robbie here. Big retirement this week, Robbie, when Kane Williamson has stepped down. I suppose someone said to me, someone who works in cricket was saying to me, oh, it was such a surprise. And I went, it's probably a surprise that it's happened after a first test. But a couple of years ago, Kane was really close to retiring as well. And I think that, you know, I think that his body is catching up with him quite a bit. I know he's had the elbow issues and a few other things. Were you surprised? How did you feel about it?
I felt like he retired typically as Kane Williamson would, very quietly and unassumingly, right?
Did you see the Twitter joke? I think it was Dan Liebke put it up and said, Kane is such a gentleman that he's retired for Ben Stokes. Which I did like. That's a good line. It's a good line.
But you're right. Where do you get these people from, bro?
I don't know where I get these people from. Shout out to Dan if he's listening. But I do think there is an element of, I think you're right. Like, he just went, okay, this felt like a very pragmatist retirement. Like, it doesn't feel emotional or anything. He's just like, I don't think I can do the thing I used to do, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah, I think we all knew he was close to it because obviously I think the tennis elbow injury took a massive emotional toll on him. You could see it in his face that it was debilitating for him in a big way, and it ate up a lot of his performance energy because with a tennis elbow injury, people don't really understand how it can leave you feeling, because there is no pathway back from a tennis elbow injury. It just kind of, like it comes out of the blue, it goes out of the blue. The people have not found a definitive way of saying, you do this and you will get better. This and you hope it goes away.
Is it something to do with the vibrations that go through when you're batting?
It's a particular part in your arm where you just, like, it's like you can't even pick, like, picking up a pen like this will feel like it's a strain.
Yeah. Because Sachin had it as well. They're the two main guys. Do you know anyone else who struggled with it?
A lot of us go through it, yeah. I've had it. And then it was like, dude, when is it going to go? Because you're doing rehab for it all the time. And like, you just hope it goes. And then you just reach a point where you're like, you know what? You know, chuck this. Like, if it goes, it goes. Otherwise, I have to play with pain. I'll play with pain.
Yeah.
And then you kind of manage. And I think he tried to do that. I think it had a huge impact on his T20 batting for sure. I think he reached a point where he was figuring out solutions to his T20 batting. And then this thing happened. And I think it impacted his overall stats per se in T20 cricket. Probably could have played at a slightly quicker pace. His strike rate was always a contentious bit, despite him scoring runs successfully. But again, the era in which he played T20 cricket was a different era to what it is now.
I mean, he was slow for his era, though. Like, I mean, let's be honest. It's not that he was. And like, there was periods where
limited. He was limited as a T20 cricketer.
Yeah. Rob Barron tells a great story about how when teams stopped putting third man back automatically, that really affected him.
That story.
Because he's so good at playing the ball down there. We don't think about stuff like that, but these things change. Technically, he really is. I wonder if we'll see too many more players like him sort of coming through in the future, because now, you know, the back lifts what everyone's talking about, power stances, you know, weight transference, pushing your body, you know, your core strength through the ground. Kane did almost none of that.
And I remember having a conversation with him a couple of years ago about the biomechanics of his batting in T20 cricket. And he holds the bat slightly rounded, right? And his bottom hand's a little rounded. And that doesn't allow you, because it leaves your bat face a little closed. So it doesn't allow you to play play through a shot aggressively. And Ben Stokes has that as well. His hands are a little closed on the bat. So every time he tries to play a shot towards mid-wicket, his bat kind of closes. So he doesn't get elevation. So even on the offside, outside the off stump, for him to play a shot outside the off stump, wide yorkers, to get under that ball, he has to change his hands on the bat. And Virat Kohli has actually spoken about this. So he's also got a rounded hand. But when people start bowling wide yorkers, he opens up his hand as he's putting his hand into the shot. And that was, I think, a limiting factor for both the likes of Kane Williamson and for Ben Stokes. And that's something that I think the injury impacted him in trying to find a solution for that, because he was great at this, right? Like, he was, it was almost like his shot. Like how G.R. Vishwanath is known for his late cut. It was almost like that dab down a third man and piercing that gap was his strength. And he did it really well. As in, I had a way of doing it where I'd go in the back foot, try and play the back foot defense and open the face of the bat and try and run it fine. And if I move, if I open the face too quickly, then sometimes get caught behind. But he has this way where he gets back and then almost on top of the ball and he kind of pats the ball on its head.
Well, that's... I mean, that's the fascinating thing. So I know you've read the article I've written, but you probably haven't seen the video of him explaining how he tries to hit the ball on top of it, which again, I mean, in it makes perfect sense when he was coming through in cricket. Like he would never be caught because he's hitting the ball down the entire time. But in T20 cricket and one day cricket, it ends up probably being a limitation that he has. But the fact that he is consciously, it's almost like, when he explained it, and the minute he said it, I was like, I can't believe I never noticed this before. It's almost like he's playing topspin cricket. Like he's hitting over the ball. And the reason he can do that, and most people can't do that, is because obviously he's got one of the best eyes that anyone's ever had. But also, he plays the ball so late. He hits the ball almost directly under, almost under his right hip. Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost under his right hip, right? Where most people are hitting it near their groin or left hip if they're waiting for it to come under. And he's almost behind his hip. And I think that that just allows him to do things that other people cannot do. But it's also probably a limitation when we get into this world of clearing your front leg and everything.
So I think that, that became a limitation because even when you try and hit the ball on top of the head, right, you can only hit it in one direction. The benefit of it is in white ball cricket, you have a single all the time, unless you have shot third man in, right? If shot third man's in. So you, he can, he could get off strike very, very quickly. I think that served him in a big way in white ball cricket, especially one day cricket, which is why his numbers in one day cricket are quite good. He's got 1500s, averages almost 49 in one day cricket, which is really good. Close to 7,500 runs, which is really nice for a player of his caliber. Now, yes, granted, he batted at number three and got a big chunk of the batting, but he knew how to pace the innings really, really well in one-day cricket. And he had enough hitters in the in his group where if he felt stuck, he could just play that pat and then get off strike. You know, it's a very important kind of commodity as a batter to have in one-day cricket. But in T20 cricket can be limiting, especially when you have third man in, then you bring point more backward, then you have more cover point, and you force a player with a rounded grip to play more towards the front of the wicket, more towards covers, right? He managed well, don't get me wrong, he managed well, but I think it limited him from power hitting the ball. And I think, you know, a big part of his career was, I think his numbers suffered quite a bit because of that tennis elbow injury, because we think it's a, it was a short period of time, I think it was a good 3 years.
I remember, I can't remember who I talked to, but there was someone who had been working with him who was like, I think he's going to retire now. I just don't think he can get through it. And he was still talking about the elbow a year after that. So it was clearly, you know, it was a big issue that went for a long time. And
it's debilitating, man. I feel bad for him. I feel for a player of his caliber and the absolute gentleman that he is, he's an absolute sweetheart of a guy, right? And so for him, for someone like him to kind of go through it, and he doesn't show it at all. You know, he kind of goes through all of these things very, very quietly. He's like the quintessential Kiwi guy, right? Like a really nice guy, fair, soft-spoken, gentle in that sense. And someone who even has played his cricket that way, right? He was more finesse than anything else, right? Complemented with grind as well and grit.
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny sims and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally. Yeah. I mean, what I find fascinating about him from a technical point of view is that he has this, when he came into the game, he had the perfect technique for Test cricket to be able to score runs. And yet during the period of his game, it has evolved to make him incorrect. And I kind of talked about this with Mitali Raj as well, of like, there are all these people online slagging off Mitali Raj because of the way that she was playing. And I was like, yeah, but in the 90s, when she was like 13 and she's learning how to play cricket, she played it exactly the way that she was supposed to play it. And then you're judging her because she's in like 2020 and she can't suddenly smash the ball over cover over and over again like.
But you at least have to try to or you at least have to try to evolve your game to the point or find a solution around that. If you can't do it, you don't. My argument to that is Kane was limited. He acknowledged he was limited and found a solution for it, even though it was not directly him. He got off strike.
He's still not really impacted. Do you know what I mean? Like the way he set himself up, right?
I disagree there with you a little bit because I would say you need, like in the era that he played T20 cricket in, holding, having wickets at the back end was critical and he played a vital role in making sure that the Kiwis had wickets in the back end of T20 games.
But he's still playing T20 cricket, Robbie. In this era, right?
He is.
So,
and which is why I think the retirement was par for the course in that sense because he wasn't like, there were limitations, there were physical limitations that didn't allow him to open up that part of his game. So you can have empathy for a Kane Williamson, but for me, for Mithali at that point, like she had, by the time 2020 came around, like 2 years, 3 years before she retired, she had, like, would you even blame Sachin Tendulkar to have played like a maverick in the last 3-4 years of his career and just go hell for leather for every ball? Like, we wouldn't. No fans of his would have felt like that, right? But if you're, like, I think one of the things that was always a point of contention with someone like a Mithali was that the slowness in which he batted impacted the outcomes of the games.
Yeah, but I think it does for Kane. That's what I'm saying, right?
I don't think Kiwis would have had the kind of results that they had as a team if they actually had an impact on the game. If it actually had an impact on the game. He actually found a way around it is what I'm saying. I think
I disagree. I think the reason that they were successful, and maybe they worked this out themselves as a team. I think the reason they were successful is that at almost all these World Cups, they're really, really good at getting new ball wickets. Right, and they do usually do it as a pack.
Yeah, let's take for granted that bowlers win you tournaments, right?
Batters win you matches. Then, but if you have a bowling attack that does that, you don't need to bat at a level that is ridiculous to everyone else, right? That's the Pakistan rule, right?
See, at the end of the day, that's the whole point, right? Is are your performances impacting a win or are they playing a part in you losing a side or losing a tournament, right?
Yeah.
I don't think his batting ever came to a point where it impacted the team in a negative manner. I think, yes, he was slow for his era. I think he's still slow. I think there were physical limitations that didn't allow him to work on that part of his game because he was so consumed by the injuries that he was going through. And so they were limiting him. And it was obviously, but he found a workaround. Like you could get a single, if you want Kane to get up at 3 a.m. At night and tell him, get off strike, he'll do it in the first ball.
Yeah. No,
that's
I get that.
So for me, I think he
found a way to be effective. But yeah, I also 100%. Think that, if he was in a team that didn't allow that. So the two teams he kind of has the most success with are probably like Sunrisers in New Zealand. That's and they are both teams with fantastic bowling attacks, right? And
When he was captain, Bhuvie. Who else is there?
Mustafiz
when he was good. Rakshit, do we know who else are there? Rakshit Thropolis. Yeah, Rakshit Thropolis.
So if you have a look, they were a very... If you have Mustafiz and Bhuvie... Right, near peak of both, although Bhuvie's just changed his peak. You basically control the start of the game and the end of the game.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. And New Zealand did a similar thing for a long period of time. My point being is that I think there are a lot of people who look at Williamson and they say, okay, he has a low strike rate. Like, because his strike rate in one day cricket's 81, right? Which is a very good strike rate if you retired 15 years ago, right? Mm. But specifically in World Cup finals and the end of tournaments, IPL as well, when the pitches get a little bit more used and chewed up and the bowlers start to dominate a little bit more, you actually do want someone like Williamson at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's the whole point. You like, because he's not going to impact your team negatively. Like he might have a neutral impact on the side, but you need players like him when wickets are a little bit more tired and in the back end of a tournament when this pressure is high, because he absorbs pressure beautifully.
Yeah.
Right. So you can never undervalue that part. So, and that's my debate here. Like for me, I don't think his batting, albeit very, very slow for T20 cricket, had a negative impact on the teams that he played for.
I think when it
felt like things were beyond him, he stepped away immediately.
Yeah. No, I think it did. But I also think that that's not his fault. It's just that teams didn't use him correctly, right? Which is a whole different argument that we could get into another time. Yeah. So as a leader, I find him very, very fascinating because, you know, New Zealand has this incredible, I think New Zealand has the best history of captains, right? Just in terms of changing the game, thinking about things in a different way, you know, moving the game forward and everything. And Kane doesn't really fit into that because his style was really, all he really did was dull down the extremeness of what McCullum did, right? And actually even go back to a more conservative thing. But at that stage, New Zealand cricket probably didn't need to experiment anymore because finally with Williamson, they had the great four-man bowling attack that they'd never really had before, right? They had the ability to do that. And so really what you needed with Williamson was to, you know, make sure that you continued the learnings that they had got from the way that they play their cricket. But actually, the fact that the fans go on about him steadying the ship was the exact correct leadership method that he needed for that team. And they made World Cup finals. They won the World Test Championship. Like, New Zealand had never done any of those things before, right? Like, he took them to a level that before that they played in, one World Cup final, the 2015 one? I think that's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, correct.
Right? And so suddenly, now some of that is just you have a better team, but he also, I think he captained to that team well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. He was an incredible captain, very astute. He was good on the field, good with changes, read the game really, really well. And I think he utilized his personnel exceptionally well. And he built a secure atmosphere within the dressing room. And I think New Zealand cricket does that. I think it's also the advantage of a country that has a low volume of cricketers. You get valued a lot more. And so you can give a longer run at the highest level and people can really improve at the highest level and go through a learning curve whilst playing international cricket. And that you're granted that when you play for smaller nations. And I think he's utilized all of these aspects really, really well as a leader and even as a player.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there is something special about him as a leader that probably, I think hardcore New Zealand fans know, and you probably know because you've come up against him quite a bit. Mm. But so the 2019 World Cup final, I remember I had this piece that I wanted to write and I was really, really in my head. And, you know, the finals just finished. Probably one of the best games that's ever been played. And then, so when you do, you might not have ever done this, but when you do the big press conferences at Lord's, they open up the Royal Tennis Courts, right? So sometimes you do it in the squat, there's a museum area that they have them. But that isn't big enough for the big events. So when it's a World Cup final, they open up. Do you know what do you actually know what Royal Tennis is? Am I just saying something that you have no idea?
I have no idea what Royal Tennis is. I'm thinking the Royal Tennis Courts are tennis courts for the monarchy. I don't know.
No. So Royal Tennis is the original version of tennis. And it's like a combination of tennis and squash. So you kind of use
paddle?
It's probably a combination of all three now, I would say. And it's a really fascinating sport. I don't know if it's a good spectator sport, which is why
indoor sport?
Yeah. It's indoor because it's a long
room.
And there's a balcony on the court. And the balcony is like part of the court. It's fascinating. Anyway, they open this up. And I remember going down and I'm sitting there, Robbie, and I'm like, you know, churning through this piece, trying to get it out on time. And then Kane walks in and suddenly I was like, oh my God, how is this going to go, right? not only should they have won this game, you know, you can go back to Mitch Santner ducking the bouncer and Trent Bolt standing on the rope and the overthrows and the super over, like all these different things have happened.
Yeah.
But also there must be a part of him that is thinking, is this as close as we ever get, right? Is this it? Like we, as a country, it has taken us like almost 100 years to get here. We should have won this game and we haven't won this game. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, the count back rule and everything else. And I don't think I've ever seen a captain accept defeat the way that he did. Right. And I'm not surprised that after that, they made another final and then they won the World Test Championship because he really did understand those things in a way that I think that it would have churned up so many other leaders where he's like, that's cricket. It happened. We lost. And I remember the comments, Robbie, because especially English press don't understand people who are not like breaking down. And so they're like trying to goad him into being like, you know, but you must have been unhappy about this, whatever. And he's like, you know, it's cricket. And I was just sitting there and I was like, that's a special person. Forget it cricket. Is. That's just a special person.
Yeah. Yeah. He's someone who's, you know, who who's very practical, and someone who's who kind of plays the game in its highest spirit. It's very rare these days, because today even people, when they nick the ball, they walk off only because the DRS is available, not because they actually are out. And I was one of those, right? But and I think someone who's Kane is one of those quintessential high quality kind of individuals who's played the sport in the modern era.
Yeah. And I do think that is worth talking about because, you know, one of the things I talked about in the piece is he does feel like a player from another time, technically, right?
He is.
As you just said, morally, leadership-wise and everything. But also, Robbie, he might be the last great number three. Now, cricket will change.
Well, don't say that because we know why Suryavanshi's changed that for the world.
Well, if he bats at number three, we don't know where he's going to bat yet.
No, so like I'll tell you what, one of the things I've learned very recently, we all thought that, you know, the definition of generational talent meant that you'll see someone coming once in 30 years, 40 years, right? But that whole concept's changed in the last two decades itself, right? We saw Virat Kohli, then suddenly we're seeing a vibe of Suryavanshi. You see the likes of, like, the kind of cricketers and the way they're playing cricket today and the way the game's moved forward and evolved itself to what it is today is just mind-boggling. Today when I'm sitting down working with players, and it's like you have to coach differently, man, now. You have to coach so differently because you're not coaching guys the same way to be technically correct. You're coaching them to be the most efficient player that they can be based on what their goals are and what they want to achieve for themselves and within cricket.
I don't disagree with any of this, but Vian Mulder, Jacob Bethel, Raymond Reefer, Cameron Green, look at who we're putting at number three at the moment. We're putting like the fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh best batter. Hey, yeah, well, Manus has come back, but Manus was out of the side for a while, right? So Manus has averaged, wait, I've got this in front of me. Manus has averaged about, during the last 5 years, has averaged about 41, which I think is the third highest average of a number three, right? People are just, the best batters aren't going there and they're not making any runs when they bat there anymore. It's a shift in our game, which might shift back, right? Like these things happen.
It's cyclical.
Exactly. But when Kane Williamson started, the year he started at Test cricket, the average of number threes, Robbie, that year, was 47. The average of number threes in 2021 was 31. And last year in 2025 was, I think, 32.
Yeah, that's because cricket's changed, right? Test cricket has changed.
I get that, but that's my point. Kane might be the last time we see a great batter want to bat at number three. Now, someone like Suryavanshi might change that, right? You know, India may have to have a great number three just to fit all their talents in. But at the moment, the world's best batters are batting at number five, not even number four anymore. It's moving further and further down the order.
They want the ball to do lesser when they're going out to bat.
Yeah, which makes sense, right? And so I wonder if, like, Williamson just feels like such a player from another era, no matter how you look at it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, we will finish with something positive. But before we do, there is an element, Robbie, of the fact that a lot of people are very, very, I point this out a lot, that in Test cricket, Kane Williamson has not made runs against India, Australia and England at a level you would expect a player of his talent to have made them, right? You're a cricketer. How much does this matter to you? I know it matters to people on the internet. How much does this matter to you?
I kind of, like, my metrics for success and definition of success is vastly different from a lot of people. For me, it's about, did my performances help win a championship? Rather than, were my numbers good against this country, A, B, C, right? That mattered less to me than did my performances help our team win matches and win championships. Individual performances have their standing for sure. At the end of the day, that's the complexity of our game, right? It's an individual sport within a team sport. So there's some people who like the individual performances and they prop that up. But at the end of the day, for me, it mattered if the team won or not, right? And I think that's how I kind of measured success. So for me, the fact that he didn't, for me, did he leave New Zealand cricket better than he found it when he did? Absolutely, yes. And did he win championships for New Zealand cricket? Yes, he did. And that's what mattered.
Yeah. I mean, the only counter I would say that as a team is that I haven't always been best against the best sides either, right? Like I know the New Zealand win, the India win is huge, but they have struggled against Australia at times. And their record against England is fascinating because sometimes they play really well against England. Sometimes they play really poorly against them. But I think when I come out of it, I think it maybe shows that there is a limitation to him as a batter when it comes to playing the best bowlers ball after ball, right? Like if you've got Broad and Anderson at one end, if you've got all the Australian bowlers, if you've got, you know, Ashwin, Jadeja, Bumrah bowling at you, I think there's probably an issue that comes up from that with the way he batted, right? But the other way I look at it is that this is the second greatest cricketer that New Zealand have ever had. Right. And I don't think there's a real argument that, and as much as I like players like, you know, Chris Cairns and Glenn Turner and Martin Crowe, I don't think any of them are anywhere near the level that Kane Williamson is at. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you're talking about a guy who averages well over 50 in Test cricket, who's got his team into two World Cup finals, who won the World Test Championship. If he has an issue, fine. Kind of every great player in the world has one issue or another. That's just his.
Yeah. That's absolutely fine. We're all not meant to be perfect, right?
And
I think coming from your mouth, that's rich. I think I absolutely adore Kane Williamson, the cricketer. I'm a huge fan of who he is as a human being. And they're not very different people. They're almost the same. There's a quite grit about the cricketer, but you meet an absolute gentleman when you meet the person. So I'm a huge fan. I think he's had an incredible career that he will be extremely proud of, and the people who love him will be extremely proud of. And I think he's served New Zealand cricket in the best way possible in the time that he's represented them, both as a player and as a captain. And that's that.
And that is that. Thank you for joining us on Kimapa. We'll be back again shortly for more of this kind of thing. Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.